From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. I don't disagree. It's a great show we got. This is what we got. We got actor Jason Schwartzman. He's from the movie Rushmore and HBO's Bored to Death, the new movie Fantastic Mr. Fox. He'll be joining us later. But first, it feels like we've been talking about the health care bill on this show all year. And that's because we have, and we're glad to see that the bill has finally come out in the Senate. It'll be over one way or another pretty soon. But we were worried about the idea in the bill to raise funds by taxing elective plastic surgery. It's instantly dubbed the Botox. Have you heard about this?
So upsetting.
You see, the problem is, if that's how they're going to fund it, they're going to need to start encouraging it. So we expect the White House to open an office for telling you you look old.
And do you want the government to come between you and your wrinkles?
Are there going to be ugly panels?
But you don't need any tucks or lifts to call us on the phone. We can't see you. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
It's Paul Gibson from Oakville, Ontario.
Ontario? Oh, it's an international contestant. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
It's always so exotic when we get calls from, well, not overseas, I guess, Canada.
Well, I had to work on my own before I called. So.
You had to work on your what?
English.
I understand. Well, it's really excellent. Congratulations, sir,
like
on your English.
In the shower. Am I the only one to whom it
That's
sounds
just how
like...
Canada sounds.
Oh.
Well, welcome to the show, Paul. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and author, most recently of Alphabet Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Roy.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
Next, it's the ethicist for Oprah Winfrey's O Magazine, Miss Faith Saley.
Hi there, Paul.
And lastly, a comedian whose first CD, I Heart Jokes, is out now. She'll be performing at the Calvin Theater in Northampton, Massachusetts on December 4th, Miss Paula Poundstone. So, Paul, you're, of course, going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time, our first game. Carl Castle will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain 2 out of 3. Do that, you win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. You have home answering machines in Canada.
You do, when they don't freeze up. Yeah.
All right. All right, now here we go. Here is your first quote.
I watched Todd, tanned and shirtless, take the baby from my arms and walk him back to the ranch house. Seeing Todd's blue eyes smiling, I chuckled. Dang. Divorced Todd. Have you seen Todd?
What?
That was an excerpt from the newly released memoir by whom?
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin, indeed.
What was that bang in there? Did she shoot a moose? Didn't she say
no, she said dang.
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 Oh, dang.
It's one of her folksy sayings.
Dang. Dang.
Well, was she thinking about divorcing him and then...
No, apparently this passage was, in fact, Ms. Palin referring to rumors that she was going to divorce Todd.
Oh.
And that was a little intimate. That was, in fact, the most intense view into the intimate life of a major American politician since Woodrow Wilson gave his famous speech, "When I see Mrs. Wilson in her petticoats, I could care less about the League of Nations." After months of anticipation, which followed whole weeks of writing, Ms. Palin's Insta-bestseller, Going Rogue, hit stores this week. Now, what's weird about her is half the country flocks to her appearances, hangs on every word she says. The other half looks on the whole phenomenon in utter amazement. Now, one theory for her polarizing effect is that she actually is sending high-frequency messages while she speaks that only a portion of the populace can hear. That's why her book signings are being tended primarily by rural white Christians, Fox TV analysts, and certain species of bat. Or maybe her appeal, which is considerable, if not universal, is based on her Evel Knievel-like courage in attempting things she's not qualified to do. Like running for the vice presidency, writing a book, speaking. Has anybody here, to be fair, read all or part of her book?
No, I feel it's like the Bible. Like, I don't need to read it. I already know what's in it.
Yeah.
I saw her picture on the cover of Newsweek in running shorts.
Yes.
And you know that old song, I was taken by surprise by a pair of roguish thighs. I don't know how that's going. She looked good. She always looks good.
She looks good. Here is your next quote.
There is no reason for an American president to do that. Our friends and allies don't expect it, and our enemies see it as a sign of weakness.
That was Dick Cheney. Remember him? He was criticizing President Obama for doing what during his trip to Asia?
Or bowing.
Bowing, right. Bowing to the Japanese emperor. The right wing, as they like to do, got very upset with President Obama, this time for bowing to the Japanese emperor. Hey! Who won that war anyway? But the real problem, from our perspective, isn't that he bowed. It's that he bowed so badly. This is true. A proper Japanese bow is done with arms at the sides, torso kept stiff, the bow at, you know, about 45 degrees. And Obama, you know, he grabs the emperor's hands and then practically kisses his own loafers he's bent over. So it wasn't so much a bow as a yoga pose. Downward facing president.
Don't traditionally American presidents throw up on the Japanese guys?
Yeah, it is. The
all right.
Accepted form of paying respects.
Then I think it was a step up, at least.
All right, very good, Paul. Here is your last quote.
I've never seen so many goth 12-year-olds in all my life.
That was a Los Angeles man. He was trying to push past the crowds of fans who turned up for the L.A. premiere of what new movie?
That would be New Moon.
Yes, the Twilight movie, Twilight New Moon. Very good. With Twilight movie number 2, New Moon, the series continues its redefinition of vampires. Instead of horrible monsters of the undead, they are unemployed Abercrombie and Fitch catalog models who sparkle. They sparkle in the sunlight, and instead of human blood, I believe they drink Red Bull and vodka. In this new movie, the sequel, the vampires are opposed by some monsters from a rival modeling agency. It ends when all the creatures of the night realize what they've been repressing and they move in together in a loft in Chelsea. I'm worried because I'm afraid for our children. What if they ever run into a real vampire?
Right.
You'll find them lying there in the ground, drained of blood, and they'll be saying, but I thought he would sparkle.
These vampires don't bite, is that right?
Well,
they do, yeah. They have to use restraint with those who they love not to bite.
Exactly.
What's the sparkle part? I'm so old.
When they're in the sun, they sparkle. What's the matter with you?
Apparently, these vampires, they don't disintegrate and die in the sun, as vampires do.
Well, do they have that whole element of driving a stake through the heart?
And garlic and crosses.
Crosses.
No, they don't have that.
You see what I mean?
No.
I mean, look, I mean, you got to feel bad at this point for, like, the traditional vampire.
Right. Yeah.
Like Nosferatu. I mean, he can't get a victim.
Right.
All the girls are like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't let you bite my neck. Mm. I think of you as my best horrific-looking friend. You're the vampire I can talk to, you know.
I think, really, that position was already taken by the Count from Sesame Street, don't you?
Yeah. Carl, how did Paul do in our quiz?
Paul, you did very well. 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Paul. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions. Paula, the Democratic candidate for Texas Attorney General is contending that a clause in the 2005 state constitutional amendment that banned gay marriages actually does what?
Bans all marriages.
In fact, yes. The amendment says, yeah, down with marriage. The amendment says marriage shall consist only of the union of one man and one woman. That's just fine as far as Texas goes. But then there's subsection B. The state can't, quote, recognize any legal status identical or similar to marriage, unquote. You know what's really similar to marriage? Marriage.
It's almost identical.
It really is.
Damn close.
They're always telling us that gay marriage would ruin it for the rest of us. Well, I hope you're happy now. The current Attorney General of Texas disagrees. There's any problem there. But there may have been repercussions beyond the gay marriage debate, though. This might end up banning things like going steady, being friends with benefits. Fortunately, Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes are still legal in Texas because whatever that is, it's not similar to marriage.
Might even ban being miserable.
Really?
Yeah, for several years.
Is that similar to marriage?
It can be.
It can. Under certain conditions, none of which appertain to you right now.
No, not currently. God, no. But they have.
I understand.
Marriage is a natural. Marriage is a hard. You rotate your tires. You work in the yard. You fight about nothing every hour or two. I wish I was married. I wish I was married. I wish I was married to you.
Thank you so much. It's time right now, of course, for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name's Beth Block. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Hey,
well, that's great.
Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Yeah, hey.
How are things in New Orleans these days?
Oh, they're great. The Saints are 9-0.
There you go. Yeah, I know. It's an amazing story. Well, great to have you.
Football?
Yes.
Is that what that is? Is that what the Saints are? They're a football team?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and that's so that's more important than the levees or the
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, we love our boys.
Well, welcome to the show, Beth. Now, you're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Beth's topic?
How did you know I always wanted to be a ninja?
We all have them. Those secret wishes we never tell anybody about. And eventually we have to let go of. For example, despite all my training, I will never get the chance to go head-to-head against Mary Lou Retton in the vault. Mm. But this week we heard about a new chance to do something some of us, anyway, have always wanted to do. Our panelists are now going to tell you three stories about fantasies becoming possibilities. Choose that real story, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes, let's do this thing. First, let's hear from Roy Blunt, Jr.
Everybody has their own ideas of paradise. Ours is very traditional, says Philo Meriday, resident manager of a motel and theme park outside of Gatlinburg, Tennessee, known as Heaven on Earth. According to a review this week on FamilyDestinations.com, 3 stars out of 5, Heaven on Earth strives to give guests a foretaste of glory divine. Instead of a pool, Heaven on Earth has a cloud, a large gauzy expanse that the reviewer, after lying on it in a long white gown, found, quote, quite relaxing. Harp music is piped in, and guests are encouraged to play along on instruments provided on a basis of first come, first served. Attendants passing out complimentary ambrosia and angel food cake are not winged, but are otherwise angelically attired, and guests may experience sensations of flying themselves by hooking up to cables on a loop around the complex. No religious services are held. We're non-denominational, says Meriday. Anyway, church in heaven would be gilding the lily. We want you to feel that you're there.
They have a motel. Gives you a chance to feel like you're in heaven. Your next story of an exciting opportunity comes from Faith Saley.
What red-blooded, straight American male hasn't fantasized about moving into the Playboy Mansion? Well, guys, iron your pajamas, because your dreams just might come true. Plagued by flaccid sales, Playboy is hoping to boost subscriptions by offering a chance to become Hugh Hefner's protege as the 83-year-old Hef prepares to pass his baton, as it were. Playboy calls it the Lotto for Grotto sweepstakes, which you can enter by buying a 1-year subscription to the magazine. Hef himself will mentor his successor on such lessons as how to tell fungible pneumatic blonde women apart, how to choose between girls whose names end with I or names that end with EE, And how to avoid Pauly Shore near the aviary. Hefner boasts he's offering a better deal than Willy Wonka. He says, my golden ticket gets you into the eye candy factory.
All right, then. A chance to step in the slippers of Hugh Hefner. Your last story of a unique fantasy come true comes from Paula Poundstone.
Travel is often the dream of a lifetime. Looking over the edge of the Grand Canyon, putting your toes in the Mediterranean Sea, walking through a London fog, and now in Western France, one can fulfill the dream of living like a hamster in the Villa Hamster. Jan Falquerjo has transformed a rental home into a much sought-after hamster habitat for humans. Guests love sipping from a water tube, climbing a ladder, and then scrambling on all fours to get to their beds. And yes, a human-sized exercise wheel. Whether to hide in the corner of the dwelling for days or make dozens of babies in just a few weeks or store food in their cheeks is up to the guests themselves. Falquero believes he is successful because he has tapped into people's desire to live like animals.
All right, let's review your choices. Let's put it this way. Let's say you've always wanted to see what heaven is like before your time comes. Well, you can go to a motel described by Roy Blunt Jr. Or perhaps you've always wanted to be Hugh Hefner. Well, you could have that chance if Faith Saley is correct. Or let's say you, like so many of us, have always wanted to live like a hamster. Well, there's a hotel for you in the western part of France, if Paula Poundstone is correct. Which of these is the real chance for a dream to come true?
Oh, that's tough. I never wanted to live like a hamster, though. I don't know many people who do.
They're out there.
Sometimes I feel like I am a hamster in a new life.
You know the difference between a hamster and a gerbil?
What, Roy?
There's more dark meat on a hamster.
You know what? You won't be staying at the hotel.
At this point, we await Beth's choice. Beth, what do you think?
I'm going to go with Roy's.
You're going to go with Roy's story of the little motel, which seems like heaven on earth, because that's the way they want it. Well, to bring you the real story, here's a bit of actual news coverage of the dream come true.
For $148 a night, the hamster villa allows...
That was one of the hosts of Fox News' Red Eye show talking about the hamster villa in France. I'm so sorry. But amazingly enough, Paula had the right answer. You didn't win. You did earn a point, however, for Roy for coming up with that very lovely sounding motel. Thank you so much for playing our game.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And now the game where we ask interesting people about things that don't interest them. About 10 years ago, a movie came out that wasn't just the best misunderstood misfit in high school movie ever made. It was the best misunderstood misfit in high school movie that could ever be made. It was the platonic ideal. It was called Rushmore, and it starred a young man named Jason Schwartzman in his film debut. He has followed up that masterpiece with a bunch of other films, including more collaborations with Rushmore's director, Wes Anderson. And this year, he starred in an HBO TV series called Bored to Death. He also plays a role in Wes Anderson's new movie, Fantastic Mr. Fox, coming out soon. Jason Schwartzman, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Really excited to have you. Obviously, I'm a big fan, but I wanted to talk to you first about your family, because you come from what I guess these days you could legitimately call Hollywood royalty, right?
I guess so.
Well, I mean, many people, for example, watch The Godfather because it's one of the great American movies. You watch it because there's your mom, Talia Shire.
Yes, my mom is in The Godfather, and No, but it's I love that movie, and I'm able to enjoy it, and it's not awkward actually for me to watch that particular movie. It's actually one of my favorite movies ever made, and it's not awkward for me at all to watch it.
Okay.
So is it awkward for you to watch that film?
Because
it's your mom.
I used the word awkward twice. Is that such a crime?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Can you use the word
self-conscious? I'm glad my mama wasn't in it.
Well, no, I'm sorry. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but your mother's Talia Shire. Your cousins and other relatives include Francis Ford Coppola, Sofia Coppola. And we're wondering, with all these, and Nicolas Cage is a cousin, what is Thanksgiving like at your household?
Well, it's pretty normal. I mean, it's like Thanksgiving would be for anybody. It's just great food, great conversation.
I love it that you have the sad perception that the rest of us have Thanksgivings with great food and great conversation.
Growing up in the family, were you drawn to Hollywood? Did you something well, you wanted to do? You were in L.A., I know, growing
absolutely
up.
Absolutely not. Actually, growing up, I didn't think that I would be an actor. It wasn't until way into my teenage years, actually just before Rushmore, that I thought maybe this is something that I could... Well, anyway, so what happened was I was so used to being, like, I just didn't have a ton of self-confidence, I guess, in high school. And I was at a party, and what did you say?
Well, I said stop only because I wanted to say no, really? But go on.
It was awkward.
I understand. But believe me, I believe you, so go on.
Would you say that it was as awkward as watching The Godfather?
It's kind of as awkward.
Okay, so wait a minute.
I'm glad you hit that one out of the park. I can't. I don't hit it right there for you. I'm glad you took
all right.
it, baby.
So you're at a party. You're awkward. You like the girls, but the girls don't like you.
I'm at a party. I'm awkward. And this casting director comes up to me at this party. She says, "Hello, I'm a casting director. My name is Davia Nelson. And you seem like you could... Are you an actor? You seem like you could be in this movie. I really think you should come audition for it." I said, "Well, I really appreciate that. I'm honored, but it will be a waste of your time. I'm not an actor." And she said, "You would play a young, eccentric teenager who writes plays and is in love with an older woman." And I thought, me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's me. I can do that. I can do that.
Right.
So I auditioned, and I was called back, and then after a second callback, I was offered the part in the movie.
Oh, my God.
And that's how it all happened. But no one in my family ever said, "Now you've got to be an actor" or anything. In fact, it's discouraged.
Let me ask you, that was 10 years ago, and that was your first of now many movies. Fantastic Mr. Fox, your latest movie. You're playing, if I'm not mistaken, you're playing Mr. Fox, that's George Clooney. You're playing his son. And this is a stop-motion animated film that Wes Anderson made. Did you have to prepare to play an insecure son of a fox?
No.
No, you had that.
Quick answer, no. No, I mean, I read the script, and honestly, if you took out any mention of the fact that they're animals, which would be silly, but if you did that, this movie could actually just be a feature film with actors in it. So to prepare for it, I read and I thought, wow, I know this guy. I know this adolescent fox that I'm about to play. And it was really fun because most animated movies, apparently, you do the acting all separate. All the actors never even meet each other most of the time. But with this movie, Wes Anderson wanted us all to do it live on location. And the movie takes place in the country, so we all actually went out and lived on a farm together as a cast. And we did the whole movie like a radio play or something. Just actors, Wes, and a sound man running around chasing us. If there was a scene that took place under a tree, we would go under the tree, act out the scene, and if it required us to dig or something in the middle of the scene, we'd all get on our hands and knees and start digging. And Bill Murray would be digging, and like leaves would be flying in the air, and we'd be growling at each other, acting insane.
You know what might be great? There's a... rental house in France where you live like a hamster. There's a big wheel and you drink from a communal tube thing.
Mm.
What would have been perfect for you guys.
Yep.
Well, Jason Schwartzman, we are delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Turns out, Mr. President, the Chinese do have a phrase for it, but you wouldn't have wanted to say it.
All right. When he was in China earlier this week, President Obama found himself looking for a Chinese equivalent of the phrase, you made your bed, now sleep in it. And he said, do you have a word for that? He said, well, it turns they do, although he wouldn't want to know what it is. We know that they have phrases like this because we talked to Jag Bala. He's the author of the book, I'm Not Hanging Noodles on Your Ears. Mm. And he has provided us with three more interesting Asian idioms that the president might want to know about the next time that he goes to Asia. We're going to ask you about them. If you can answer two out of three questions about these idiomatic phrases correctly, you'll win our prize. Ready to do this?
No.
Okay. Even though you're not ready, you are playing on behalf of one of our listeners. Carl, who is Jason Schwartzman playing for?
Jason is playing for George Mitchell of Los Angeles.
Great.
So here's your first question about idioms in Asia. Idioms.
Okay.
All right. If in China you are working as hard as you can, are you A, building the Great Wall with only your toes? B, working with your liver and brains on the ground? Or C, chewing through the walls of your parents' house? Mm. These are phrases you'd say in Chinese, meaning
B.
Working very hard. B, you're going to go working with your liver and brains on the ground?
Yep.
You're right. Very good.
Wow.
Yeah. All right.
This got to be a confidence builder, though, getting that right so quickly. There was no
hesitation.
I feel better now.
I feel pretty cocky right now.
Yeah, I'll bet you.
Next, in Japan now. Japanese idiom. If someone is showing defiance, does one say they are A, imprudently gazing at a superior in the eye, B, raising up one's kimono and showing one's buttocks, or C, seizing one's sword and decapitating everyone in the room?
A.
You're going to say that they're imprudently gazing at the superior in the eye.
Yes.
No, actually, it was, in fact, B, buttocks. It's the phrase is raising up one's kimono and showing one's buttocks.
Wow.
Buttocks play a role in Japanese idioms, according to Mr. Bala. For example, if you are rash or incautious, you are said to have light buttocks.
Wow.
This is exciting, though. It's down to this. Last question. If Obama were to whine in Japan, he'd be doing what? A, smelling up the air with verbal gas. B, vomiting the sound of weakness. Or
Whoa.
C, acting like an American.
Yikes. I don't think it's C.
You don't think it's C, acting like an American. That would be rude.
I don't think it's acting like an American. I feel like it's either A or B, obviously.
Smelling up the air with verbal gas or vomiting the sound of weakness.
Wow. So there's a chance here that you've given me three questions, all with the answer B in them.
That is a possibility.
I'm going to go with that possibility then.
You're going to choose B, vomiting the sound of weakness?
Yes.
You're right.
No.
Wow.
Vomiting the sound of weakness is how you, when one is whining in Japan, that's what they're doing.
Wow.
Carl, how did Jason Schwartzman do in our quiz?
He's a winner, Peter. He had two correct answers, so he wins our prize for George Mitchell.
Well done.
Nice.
You did it, sir.
Yeah.
Jason Schwartzman is a musician and an actor. You can see him in HBO's new series, Bored to Death, and the film Fantastic Mr. Fox, which opens Wednesday, November 25th. Jason Schwartzman, thank you so much for being
guys.
With us today.
Bye, Jason.
Great to have you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jason. It was great to have you. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Say bye to Jason. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl admits he once shot a man in Reno just to watch him rhyme. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Faith, the Taliban is waging a serious propaganda war in Afghanistan. They're producing magazines and DVDs, and they're embracing new mobile technology with what?
iPhone apps?
That would be hilarious. What would a Taliban iPhone app do?
I don't know.
Condemn you for owning the iPhone.
It's hard to get...
You'd turn it on and your iPhone would go, infidel, infidel.
If you could get bars,
exactly.
Right? You need bars. It's hard to get in a cave.
You'd
I
be
guess.
Surprised, though, actually. Having bars in that context is, in fact, relevant here.
They're handing out cell phones and texting.
No. Even better.
Dude, calling. It's robocalls.
Whatever it is, it sure beats a tinny version of Fur Elise.
It's
a ringtone.
Ringtone.
Oh, my God.
Downloadable.
You are very patient and generous. Yeah. Thank you.
You can get a Taliban ringtone?
What does it sound
Downloadable
like?
Downloadable Taliban ringtones.
Huh. Yeah, what does it sound like?
Well, we don't know. We're afraid to order one. Yeah. Now, the Taliban are, of course, religious extremists, but just like Carrie Prejean noted that nowhere in the Bible does Jesus denounce boob jobs, the Quran says nothing about downloadable ringtones. So terrorism is now the second most annoying thing embraced by the Taliban. But as you say, what is a Taliban ringtone? Well, there are various prayers and calls to action. Sounds of explosions, I guess, yes. The most popular Taliban ringtone is the hit Taliban dance beat by cleric Mullah Al-Biance, Single Veiled Ladies.
Put a burqa on it.
Exactly. Faith, the Obama administration claims their economic stimulus package has created 30 new jobs in the 15th congressional district in Arizona. One problem, though. What?
There is no 15th congressional
district. There is no 15th congressional district in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. That's bad.
Residents of Arizona's 15th district were at first overjoyed to learn that federal stimulus spending had created or saved 30 jobs there. But disappointment soon set in when the residents realized that they themselves did not exist. The Recovery Board said it was just a paperwork error, but if so, it's widespread. Countless jobs were created in non-existent districts in Oklahoma, Iowa, and Connecticut. Weirdly, Michigan came up with 13 fake counties, but they all reported job losses. Can't win for losing, Michigan. Joe Biden, speaking for the administration, urged that Americans not be so quick to dismiss imaginary districts, and then called for the passage of CLAFTRA, the Candyland American Free Trade Agreement.
So did they give an explanation?
Well, apparently what they were asking people to fill out forms like, oh, did you get a job and did you get it? And people responded yes. And then it's like, what's your congressional district? And people tend not to know. Uh-huh. So they wrote in fake numbers.
Right. Oh.
So, no wonder they don't have a job.
There you are. Roy, the economy is in the tank and there's double-digit unemployment. It's no wonder some Americans are feeling cranky. Enter Missouri Democratic Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver. He is working on a resolution sure to stop the complaining. He wants to end what?
What is it? Vomiting up the...
Vomiting up the sound of weakness.
So exactly, yeah. Whining?
Yes, he wants to stop the whining.
All right.
He's going to make next Wednesday Complaint-Free Wednesday. Finally, a member of Congress has taken the time to listen to his constituents, and now he desperately wants them to shut up. Congressman Cleaver is looking for co-sponsors to help pass Resolution 155, making the Wednesday before Thanksgiving next week Complaint-Free Wednesday. He cites as precedent the landmark Depression-era resolution called Oh, Shut Your Pie Hole.
I think he's probably breaking with history to expect the Wednesday before Thanksgiving to have no complaints.
Right.
Because back to the earliest Thanksgiving, the pilgrims were saying, you know, I don't think we're going to have enough food. And what time did you tell the Indians to come? That's too early.
Do we have to have the Indians?
We don't enjoy having the Indians. I don't know what to say to them. We don't have enough folding chairs.
Mm-hmm. It's awkward. But it's better than the day after Thanksgiving, when everybody's talking about how bad it was, even worse than we thought it was.
Yeah, yeah. Never should have held it in, whining day.
Yeah. Never again.
Let it fly Friday.
Was I? Oh.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or you can click the Contact Us link on our website at waitwait.npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Kate Lewis from San Francisco.
Hey, Kate, how are you? How are things in that beautiful city by the bay?
They're fantastic, thanks.
What do you do there?
I'm a toy designer.
A toy designer?
Wow! Mm-hmm.
Do you sit around and make up toys?
Yep, pretty much.
What kind of toys have you made up?
I make stuff for babies and toddlers, mostly developmental stuff.
You make that stuff that purports to make our children smarter?
Exactly.
Can I tell you now that it has not worked? Well, welcome to our show, Kate. It's great to have you with us. Carol Castle is now going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
Your tongue is no better than mine. You can't tell the Rhone from the Rhine. You sniff, sip, and spit, but you'll have to admit you can't make clear judgments on
wine.
Exactly right. What you have long suspected is true. Those wine critics who go on and on about the fruity bouquets and a glass of Chardonnay with notes of copper plum and wet dog. It's all bull. They're making it up. According to a study in the Journal of Experimental Psychology, humans are physically incapable of identifying more than four different taste components in a single mixture. But respected wine reviewers will list six or seven in their reviews. This explains why one highly rated Burgundy was listed as having, quote, nut and fruit aromas with notes of oak, raspberry, clay, and oh my God, I can't pretend anymore, it tastes, I don't know, red, okay? It tastes like red wine, unquote. Here's your next limerick.
On my toddler, I'm dropping a dime, and someday he'll be doing hard time. His illicit career stems from absence of fear. He's just three, but he'll soon commit
crime.
Exactly right. According to a joint study in the U.S. and Britain, future criminals start showing signs of hoodlumism as early as three. Scientists tested a group of toddlers. They tested their fear responses and checked back in 20 years later. Kids who were afraid of loud, unpleasant sounds were more likely to grow up as normal, police-fearing adults. But the three-year-olds who later turned to crime simply responded, "Is that all you got, big guy?" Here is your last limerick.
We ladies can dress for a win and make the male frontal lobe spin. We are most appealing when halfway revealing. We show 40% of our...
Yeah.
Right. Ladies, it's not what you wear. It's how much you don't wear. Researchers now at Leeds University say they have discovered exactly the right level of immodesty for women. An outfit that reveals 40% of the woman's skin will get her just the right amount of attention. Show more than 40%, the guys will just want to buy you Jello shots.
Isn't there, which 40%?
Well, that's the question. The scientists make no distinction as to which skin you're showing. So according to them, for example, wearing a sleeveless, thigh-length dress will get you the same amount of attention as wearing full-length gloves, chaps, and nothing else. Give it a try, ladies and gentlemen. Report back.
So Palin's Newsweek cover was statistically perfect.
It was perfect, exactly. Yeah.
Perfect. Wow. She was probably part of the study.
Carl, how did Kate do in our quiz?
Kate was perfect, Peter. Three correct answers. So, Kate, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done. Congratulations. Kate, thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roy Blunt Jr. has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Faith Saley has 3. Paula Poundstone has 2 points.
I've been through it before.
All right, Paula, you're in third place. You're up first.
Yeah.
The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Attorney General Eric Holder was criticized for his decision to try the accused 9/11 mastermind in blank.
In New York City.
Right. A federal judge ruled Wednesday that negligence by the Army Corps of Engineers was partially responsible for the flooding of New Orleans during blank.
Katrina.
Right. For the second time in 7 months, the ship Maersk Alabama thwarted an attack by blank.
Somali pirates.
Right. Because of a heated pricing dispute, Costco announced it would no longer be carrying blank products.
Oh, Coke!
Right. A student in the Bronx threatened to sue New York City after he failed to dodge a ball during blank.
Dodgeball?
Right, a game of dodgeball. Harpo Productions announced that blank's talk show will end in 2011.
Oh, no! Oprah!
Yes. The U.S. Postal Service announced that it would be ending a program in which volunteers answer letters that children write to blank.
Santa Claus.
Right. A group of Minnesota kids posted a video on YouTube of themselves harassing people in the streets, but police are on their trail since they blanked.
Since they said their names.
No. Well, almost. They put their names in the credits of the video.
Well, I think that's the same as said their names.
Well, the teens filmed themselves knocking over bicyclists, stealing hats, and tackling runners. And then they edited and added music to the footage, and they titled Watch This TV, and then, just so they could take credit for their skills, they identified themselves in the credits at the end.
Wow.
Carl, what do you think? Does Paula get credit for that?
We'll give her credit.
All right.
Wow.
In that case, Carl, how did Paula do?
Paula had 8 correct answers.
My God.
She now has 18 points and a commanding lead.
Wow.
Okay, Faith, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Officials in Afghanistan ordered a security lockdown of Kabul for the inauguration of blank.
Karzai.
Right. An independent government panel caused a stir by recommending that women wait until age 50 to begin getting blank.
Mammograms.
Right. Although it posted losses of $1.2 billion, blank announced it would repay its government loans early.
GM.
Right. General Motors, the Senate, and President Obama officially saluted blank for becoming the longest-serving member of Congress in history.
Senator Robert Byrd.
Right. Customs officials in Spain confiscated $1 million worth of counterfeit cigarettes filled with blank instead of tobacco.
Oh. Manchego cheese.
No. Rabbit poo. Often confused with Manchego, geologists warned this week that the famous white sandy beaches in blank are eroding.
Hawaii.
Right. On a meet at the press this week, Hillary Clinton said she would look forward to having coffee with blank if it
Sarah
was available.
Palin.
Yes. A Boston teachers union is opposing a plan to award performance bonuses to the city's best teachers because blank.
It will cost them money.
No, because it would make the bad teachers feel bad about themselves.
You know what? You need to give me that point, because if I don't get it, I'm going to feel bad about myself. Please.
We're not
please,
the teachers
Carl.
Union.
Come on, Carl.
In a kind of everybody is a winner initiative, the union wants all the teachers to share in the good performance bonuses, even if they perform badly. The union is also pushing to revise the qualifications for Teacher of the Year status to include all teachers who have successfully utilized a piece of chalk. Carl, how did Faith do in our quiz?
Faith had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15, but Paula has the lead still with 18 points.
Well done.
There aren't any questions left that anybody knows the answer to.
Well, how many, then, does Roy need to win?
7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
All right, Roy.
All right. All
here
right.
we go. Roy, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, Majority Leader Harry Reid unveiled the Senate's new blank plan.
Health.
Right. A maximum security prison in Illinois is being considered as a new location for detainees currently held at blank.
Guantanamo.
Right. An intoxicated Tennessee woman was arrested after she mistook a police officer for a blank.
An old friend of hers.
A Sonic drive-in car hop.
Oh, yeah.
3 times in the past week, the motorcade for blank was involved in a traffic accident.
Joe Biden.
Right. For the second time, People Magazine awarded the title Sexiest Man Alive to blank.
Well, I don't want to say. Probably that vampire kid. I don't know.
No, Johnny Depp.
Oh.
The Canadian Prime Minister received a text message saying, quote, Lady Thatcher has passed away, and immediately sent his staff to prepare an official statement, only to discover blank.
They didn't know the phone number of Mr. Thatcher.
No, that Lady Thatcher was the name of the Canadian Transport Minister's cat.
Oh.
So the Prime Minister of Canada Stephen Harper, he's at a gala banquet. He gets a text message announcing that Lady Thatcher has died. He immediately sent an aide to contact Buckingham Palace and British Prime Minister Gordon Brown. They started to prepare an official statement. And then they found out that the Lady Thatcher in question was actually Transport Minister John Baird's 16-year-old cat, who had died after a long and happy life.
That's 86 in Prime Minister years.
Exactly. All right, Carl, did Roy do well enough to win?
He needed 7 correct answers to tie, but Roy had just 3 correct answers. So with 18 points, Poundstone is this week's champion.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
That was dominant, Paul. Yeah. That was remarkable.
I feel strong.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists the name of the sequel to Sarah Palin's book, Going Rogue. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Medicare open enrollment ends December 31st. More at Medicare.gov or 1-800-MEDICARE. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Ashley Rayfeld. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the title of Sarah Palin's next book? Roy Blunt, Jr.
It's called If I Did It, and it's about the shooting of Levi Johnson.
Paula Poundstone.
Well, the next book will actually be ghostwritten by Mr. Palin. And it will be called I Never Knew What Only Dead Fish Go With the Flow Meant Either. A Cry for Help from Mr. Palin.
And Faith Saley.
As a gift to all Americans, it will be called Going Away.
Well, if Sarah Palin publishes any of those book panels, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castro. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Faith Saley, and Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagan. We'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.